So I used to be in my astronomy department all my life until I got here about a year ago. So I think I got to know something about astronomers before I got here. And you would think that after these two experiences, I would have new appreciation for both astronomers and theoretical physicists. But actually, the fact of the matter is that familiarity brings contempt. So it just used to be I didn't take astronomers very seriously, thought theoretical physicists are these smart guys. Now I don't take either seriously. And you can see that from this talk. But on a more serious note, I'm trying to bridge or stick the CETA talks and PRI talks. And let me know if it works or not. But look at this from the point of this being a skeptical and possibly heretical talk, somebody who doesn't take theory or observation very seriously. So these are my collaborators, and I'm going to talk about the massive gravity. Yes, I've been infected by theoretical physicists. This is what happens as a result. So, but before that, so let's tell you what everybody knows. The cosmology is experiencing its golden era, thanks to many people in this room. We have experiencing a renaissance. A six-parameter golden model can now explain almost all observations in cosmology, from neutral hydrogen, as we heard, as many people in this room have contributed to cosmic microwave background. And these are examples. This is Mike Nolte. So actually, many of the data that I'm showing in this talk has been taken by the people in this room. So I don't take responsibility for that. But this is the first example. Good. So are we done? Well, and we are in the era of precision cosmology. We have exquisite accuracies. For all important cosmological parameters within few percent. So that's all good. But there have been great physicists, some of the greatest physicists in the past centuries, who weren't very, very fond of what cosmologists have been doing, at least historically. So that's where we were back then, or at least some great minds thought back then. And this is one of the papers that influenced me a lot, that was from 10 years ago, Is Cosmology Solved? And of course, this was just around the time that dark energy was being introduced and settled, and Jim Peebles in his great wisdom, he already knew that there must be a lambda when everybody else was unsure. But then if you add that lambda to the mix, this is the key question, is cosmology solved? So, Are we really done? Is lambda CDM explaining everything? And should we just go and work on a star formation or condensed matter physics? Now, so just to complete the mix of great physicists of the last century is another one. And one thing that he brought to our attention, of course, we knew about this long ago, is that even though lambda CDM seems to work very well observationally, it is very unusually small, this parameter lambda. And that all of us know through the fact that if you try to calculate lambda from any quantum theory model, it would look like something like mass scales in a standard model, for example, to the fourth power times some logarithmic factor. And that's really the smallest term that you get. So there are larger terms that maybe you can argue away, but these ones don't go anywhere at current. And if we put a TeV, say, for Higgs or W mass, well, I guess for Higgs mass, then you get something at 60 orders of magnitude larger than the observational value. And there have been few ways out of this, and we have struggled. And theories haven't been very successful, or successful at all, I should say. So that's part of the problem, that even though the model seems to work very well, there's such deep theoretical ignorance or lack of understanding. Now, you would think that might be all, and this is the heretical part of the talk. So I'm going to go and count for you the problems with lambda CDM that are often ignored for one reason or another. So these are, so I'm going to tell you that these are the data taken by the people in this room. So if you don't want to believe them, you should talk to them, not to me. So the CBI XS, Lyman Alpha Forest, there's integrated Sachs-Wolf effect. So these are small scale observations. There's a structure on a larger scale, integrated Sachs-Wolf effect. There's a so-called dark flow, which has been recently, which have recently come to surface. You may decide to believe or not to believe it. And then there is the now infamous cosmic microwave background discrepancies or anomalies on larger scales. And I'm going to focus on the fact that correlation function vanishes beyond 60 degrees. Yes, there could be one answer or different answers. And I'm going to opt as, since I believe all the great observers who are here in this room, so I'm going to opt to come up with a theoretical answer rather than an observational one. But yes, so there are skeptics for every single one of these observations. But let me tell you, and you can interrupt me at any time, and hopefully somebody in the room will answer you. But yeah, all of these come to the question that do we really measure sigma 8 at low redshift? And I think the answer is no. There might be an exception to this, and maybe cluster counts, extra cluster counts is the only exception that I'm not going to talk about. But then people are not very enthusiastic about extra clusters sometimes. Well, if they agree, they like it. If they don't agree with the model, they don't like it. So I'm going to ignore extra clusters for now, but everything else is fair game. So I think this signifies the problem that maybe we don't really measure sigma 8 at low redshift. And does it need to be the same as a sigma 8, the amplitude of power spectrum at high redshift? So let's start. So this is a CBI XS problem that has been with us for the past 5 years. Some people in this room know already that if it's going to stay with us or not. Now is the time to jump in. Yes. Okay. Is this going to be? Is there going to be a problem?
There's always a problem.
Continue to speak.
Okay. Good. Okay. Perfect. So this is one nice characterization of the problem. This is not a CBI paper. This is an ACPR paper, but it combines all the data, CMB, power spectrum, and high Ls. This is the troubling point. And there's a frequency dependence. So these points are actually can be consistent with each other if they all come from the semi-isolated log. And this is the problem, that the sigma 8 that you measure at redshifts of 1,000 from microwave background is not the same as the sigma 8 that you measure at redshifts of 1 based on the number of clusters that effectively contribute to the cosmic microwave background. So now this is 1, 2 sigma. I don't know how many sigma it is. And I guess are you gonna tell us how many sigma this discrepancy there is? Or maybe not? No.
Well, it depends on how well you believe you can turn sigma into a density spectrum.
Okay. Well, so that's there seems to be some tension between these two. People say it's around 2 sigma. If it's less than 2 sigma, you can probably ignore it, but if it's larger than 2 sigma, maybe it's something to worry about. So that's the first plot. There could be a problem. Now this is another plot that people don't really connect these two to each other, but I think maybe they should be connected. This is the plot that Pat made. Now this is the amplitude of linear. Now there is some complicated procedure into inferring the linear power spectrum from the Lyman Alpha Forest observations. But if you believe that, this is the amplitude that you get at some k, at some large k, I guess, at some large k from Lyman Alpha Forest. And this is the amplitude that WMAP 3 plus a Lyman CDM cosmology would give you. And if you have 3 neutrinos, this is the error release. And this is, so there's some, you could say, factor of 2 in power, maybe 30, 40% difference between. So of course, errors are large. This discrepancy is something around 2 sigma still. So you still may not want to take it very seriously, but it also goes in the same direction that maybe there is more power than you would predict from the CDM and CMB alone. Okay? Nobody wants to interrupt me? Okay. Good. Now, here's another one.
You did say maybe you don't want to take it seriously.
But Pat is here, so I don't dare say anything about that. Lana, I'm sorry. Steve, do you want to add anything?
No. It's at the level. We could do so much better if we worked hard at it.
Absolutely.
At this level and improve the either, it's at the borderline of statistical significance. Mm-hmm. So I just think we should do it better. And then.
Yes.
So, Pat, do you think just with current data, the work can be done better, or are you talking about just any better data?
Well, we have a lot more data with 3 or 4 times as many spectra that we haven't analyzed, and also the simulation theoretical work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so certainly more data would tell. Learn alpha is complicated, that's why there are few people in the world who can actually make sense of it, including Pat. But it would be nice to have simpler data than to analyze, maybe from the kind of thing that Pat is advertising. And I'm gonna push that advertisement as well at the end of the talk. Now this is a different kind of observation, completely different. It's still getting something curiously similar. So this is measuring the integrated Sachs-Wolfe effect through correlation of galaxy survey speed. Galaxy surveys with WMAP, with cosmic microwave background. Since there's a dark energy, we all know that there is a dark energy, there is a potential that doesn't remain constant, it decays. So there will be some effect, something can be an isotropy, so called YSW effect, at late times, which would be correlated with potential and with galaxy distribution. So you can use this correlation, and you can predict how much it should be in the lambda CDM model. There is a bias which you normalize from autocorrelation of galaxies. And if you get the bias, then you can actually compare the predicted ISW from lambda CDM and your bias from autocorrelation with the observed value through cross-correlation. And this is the latest work on this, and there's another work by Ryan Scranton and collaborators, which is not as easy to see the effect in. But there is a large error in this ratio observed to predicted. But all of them seem to be above 1. And if you average all of them with the right correlation and weighting, it's 2.2 plus and minus 0.6. So another 2 sigma discrepancy. Again, in the same direction. You have twice as much power as you were supposed to. Of course, the error is large, so you can probably make it work if it's not just a factor of 2. It could be less than a factor of 2. But still, it's something else, another 2 sigma effect to worry about. Now, this is something else, and I guess Mike Hobson isn't here to correct me or to comment on this, or I guess to defend his work. But so I guess he can badmouth this as much as you want, although this will be recorded, so be aware of that. So this is an amazing work. So I guess those of us who have been around long enough, and this is just around the time that I had entered the field of these dark flow, the bulk flow measurements, went out of fashion, there is a way of measuring these velocities directly, not through redshift space distortion, but just measuring distances to galaxies and compare them to the redshift. And there have been problems with that because distances cannot be very reliably measured. There have been distance ladders which didn't work very well in the past. Now, what this gentleman did but the heroic effort of comparing all these different samples and do a basically a statistically optimized way of comparing them and marginalizing over errors and getting basically the average velocity of the universe through the method, the simple thing that I mentioned, the difference between the Hubble flow and from the distance and the redshift. And what they found was that the mean velocity within a 15 megaparsec sphere is something like 400 kilometers per second with some small error. And this is what lambda CDM predicts. It is a factor of 100. Yeah, that's the RMS velocity. So this is a random number, but this RMS value is much smaller than what you actually see. Now, there could be some systematic effect that give you this. If your distances are wrong, you get a systematic velocity. But the fact is that these people have used different methods with different surveys, and they all gave you consistent velocities in a consistent direction, in the same direction, basically. So that gives you some weight. That gives some weight to this measurement. That might suggest that this is not just some systematic effect if all different surveys give you the same result. And this is troubling that this value is so much larger than what you expect from the CDM. And this would be the implication for the sigma 8 omega matter region. This is that WMAP5 gives you. And this is the 95% region, or 2 sigma region, from this measurement. So the center is somewhere up there. But you are between 2 or 3. Lambda CDM is basically ruled out at somewhere between 2 or 3 sigma. And of course, this very much depends on your priors. It's not very, very objective statement. But the simplest thing you can think of says that lambda CDM is out of the 2 sigma region. So maybe if sigma 8 is larger by is 1, for example, somewhere up there, then it might be fine, maybe. But as it is, there seems to be a problem. What gives even more weight to this is something more recent that many people have taken trouble with, but I actually don't see anything that completely invalidates this result. It's this beautiful, well, absolutely beautiful measurement of, well, first detection of, or claim detection of the kinetic SC effect through, by looking at Rosette clusters. And there could be many things that go wrong in this kind of measurement, but I'm not going to discuss those here. But this is the result that this is an independent way of getting the peculiar velocities, and it seems to suggest that there is a bulk peculiar velocity on the scale of a few hundred megaparsec in the same direction that this previous one was. Larger errors and much larger systematics, but it's still much larger than lambda CDM, the factor of around 10 larger than lambda CDM. So I don't think all of these could be coincidence. So I mean, even forgetting about other reasons, other measurements, this particular bulk flow, the fact that all of them point to the same direction and are more or less consistent in value, that probably suggests either there's a conspiracy going on between these observers, which I guess if Mike was here, he could address that or try to defend. But or there is something real about this.
When you're showing spherical plot, you mean bulk velocity, the dispersion of those scales.
That's right. So this is RMS velocity.
That's right. What they claim they see, the dipole motion.
Yes.
It's not the same. It's
No, it's the same quantity. So it's velocity average within the sphere of some radius. And
this is residual, but after all this averaging, they're claiming the coherent,
yes, so that's what I mean by averaging. So you're averaging velocity. No, I'm not saying that you square velocities and then average them. I'm saying you average velocity vectors, all the velocity vectors in a sphere, and that gives you a number. And then you can look at this distribution and its RMS. So this is the coherent part of the velocity. And there's a random part we don't care about.
But I'm not sure you can compare them with the same plots.
But there is an error. So if this error is spotted correctly, then you can compare them. But this.
It's a distribution, and this is drawn from that, supposedly drawn from that distribution.
So this is the RMS of the distribution. Yeah. So it's just a Gaussian. It's the absolute value of a Gaussian random field, and this is the range that you expect from cosmic variance. And the value is just much larger than that. So I can't think of a system. Well, there could be some factor 10 systematic in these Rosette X-ray analysis. That's a possibility. I think that's too much. I think that most it could be a factor of 2 systematic, which is makes it still inconsistent. Because if the factor 2 actually makes this error the smaller, and the point is smaller. So still there would be so many sigma discrepancy, I think maybe 2 or 3 sigma.
So are those errors correlated?
Sorry?
How correlated are the errors?
They are very correlated. All these are very correlated. So you can just look at one of these, yeah. it's not even clear exactly which redshift the signal is. So if this 300 megaparsec, you can take it to the grain of salt.
So have you gotten into this paper? We had a brief discussion at CETA, but none of us have really gotten into it. And you know, the natural skepticism for all of these bulk flows always arises. Now, I know what Hume did, which was a very clever thing. He was using the signal-to-noise eigenmodes to try and get rid of the traditional problems with the large-scale streaming. And so that's an interesting result, but you know, this has been a checkered area. For this one, you have to really take into account exactly what the selection effects, et cetera, have been for the clusters. And so, you know, I'm sure that one's got into this, but did they do, I mean, from this figure, I assume that they did cuts with various velocities of their sample, but did they do subsamplings of different regions of the sky because, you know, these are very inhomogeneous. You know that Brent Tully has always pushed, you know, the ultra large scale structure, 300 megaparsecs in cluster samples.
Yeah.
And maybe that's all going to rematerialize, but there is a reason that since the mid 80s, these have not been high on our agenda, in spite of the fact that, you know, we entertained it at the time, and I'm perfectly willing to re entertain it, but it would be nice if it was much more concrete.
I think so. Let me tell you my take on it. I think there was one and only one reason that people take this seriously, because different people got different results. And now everybody seems to get the same result.
Who is everybody? You mean the Kashlitsky?
No, I mean 10 years ago. So these bulk flows, everybody was getting, there was like Lauer and Postman, and there were other bulk, everybody was getting a bulk flow in different directions.
Well, and, you know what happens is take a version here, right? They gave the velocity. The only test which gave you omega is 1 was velocity test, or big omega. And so, is it?
Yeah, so
no, but it disappeared precisely. I mean, first of all, people gave up. They said, oh, it's just too nasty, and then CME came along and wiped it all away. But the reintroduction of that as something to take seriously was actually because Hume Feldman just said, if we do the eigenmodes, we can get rid of the nonlinear effects that have really screwed up this thing. So what people did is that they put in artificial large-scale filters on the data sets, and it just wasn't done that well. And so this is a way to try and do that systematically. I did not realize that they were coming out with such a large value again with the 400, and so maybe they're resurrecting omega equals 1. Well, no, I don't know.
It's not. So you see, there is a hard way of checking, seeing that this is wrong and true comparing with other experiments, but there is an easy way, just internal consistency. And it was that people were finding these velocities in different directions for the same region of the universe. And that was obviously wrong. And I think that was this field was abandoned. And the claim is now they get use different samples and use this superior method that you were describing. The claim is that all these different samples give the same velocity in the same direction, which are statistically consistent. That's the thing that has changed, at least as far as I can tell. And the obvious way that, and I don't know why. What other systematic could give you that? And that's why I take this a bit more seriously than I should probably. It's just the fact that this value and its direction seems consistent. But yeah, there could be many. This is the first attempt at something like this. ROSAT, there is just so much that you can do with ROSAT X-ray clusters because X-ray is almost impossible to calibrate. There is this consistency, so you can take it or leave it, but it's just because all these different methods seem to give you the same answer. That says that there might be something to this. But okay, so that's this. Now this is a competing line of evidence that doesn't give you extra power, and this is from lensing. So this is just one example. Is it the best lensing measurement? I don't know. Lensing measurement of sigma 8, but maybe it's probably one of the better ones. And it's completely consistent with W map. So the green area is W map. These blue regions are constraints from lensing. And this is they are completely consistent with each other and a small sigma 8. So does the lensing wipe out all the problems? So should we just forget about this, and there could be some other reason that all those other experiments give you something wrong. Not necessarily, especially if you've been at Perimeter Institute for the past year. Gravity isn't necessarily Einsteinian. It's not general relativity. So in Einstein relativity, in cosmology, you can write down metric as long as you're close to FRW that looks like this. This is Newtonian potential. And this is, I'm not sure what people call it. Is there a name for it? A spatial curvature, yeah, or something like that. So it's the spatial part of metric, and this is Newtonian potential. So it turns out that in general relativity, these two are the same, or one is, depending on your convention, that one has, you might have a minus sign. But the fact is that in non-relativistic particles, galaxies, everything that you see in the universe that moves with non-relativistic velocities actually only follows psi, only sees psi. But photons, which dictate lensing and ISW predictions, see the lensing potential, which is pi minus psi divided by 2. Of course, it's divided by 2. Thank you. Is a convention. So these two are the same in general relativity, but don't need to be the same. So there could be, in principle, a difference between the lensing, the sigma h that you measure from lensing observations, or ISW, and the lensing that you and the sigma h that you measure from all these non-relativistic probes, from galaxies, from redshift space distortions, or just Coster number counts, for example. So are we seeing the first evidence for modified gravity deviations from GR on larger scales? Well, we'll see. So let's talk about something completely independent, which kind of seems a bit contradictory with everything else I've told you about. And this is a thought that I guess Mark Nolte is very familiar with, and all the WMAP people. This is a statistic that was introduced in the first WMAP paper with Sprague et al. So this is the autocorrelation function of the CMB, and every point here is very correlated with every other point here. So there is no easy way of doing a statistics by eye here. But the fact is that if you just look at this correlation function beyond 60 degrees, it looks much smaller than what you see in lambda CDM, what you predict from lambda CDM with Gaussian statistics. And if you quantify it this way, which doesn't seem very much justified by any means, but it's just some statistics. And if you just compare this, your WMAP 5 best fit cosmology model, which fits all the acoustic peaks and everything, gives you something like 50,000. And the number that you measure from this is like 1,000. There's a factor of 50 difference between these two. And the probability of getting, and of course, this is not a number, this is a statistic, because these are random, this could statistically fluctuate, but the probability of getting something so small is like 0.03%. It's very small. Now, could it be random? Could it be some systematic thing that accounting for? It's hard to tell. The only thing that could give you something like this reasonably is some sort of systematic in WMAP. Map making, and since I believe Mike and his collaborators very much, I completely ruled that out from the outset. So that means that there is something wrong with our cosmology. Okay? So that's case closed. Yeah. this is more, this is like 3 sigma. Yeah, or even more, I don't know. It's more than, yeah, I think this is more, even more than 3 sigma. So this is 0.03%. I think 3 sigma is like 0.3%, right? Yeah, this is 0.03%. So it's very,
it is.
And it's amazing that you would think that, okay, so if this is some statistical thing, it should, I mean, if you look at the different, like, subsequent years, memory increases. It's funny that it keeps decreasing with years. So this is, for 3 years, it was like 1,300. And then it becomes 1,100. And there are different ways of doing it. But the simplest way of doing it, which is just taking correlation function directly from your map, gives you the smallest number. which is kind of bizarre. So this is another thing to worry about, and this is one thing that keeps us awake at night here at PI, other than the great coffee. So, okay. Yeah, that too. So this is okay. So now coming back to the excellent talk by Andrew from the morning. So we had lots of problems. I started with cosmological constant problems, and I painstakingly. How long time? I've got that. Okay, thank you. So I think that should be enough. So I painstakingly took you through all these itsy-bitsy pieces of evidence. But the biggest one, of course, is there's a 10 to the 160 sigma discrepancy. That's a cosmological constant problem. And we have local experts on solving that. It's the so-called it's a high pass filter for gravity. This is what the idea that Andrew described is already on the board. That maybe somehow, if your G Newton has a box dependence in it, has a wavelength dependence in it, for long wavelength modes, and your G Newton goes to zero, so somehow your gravity doesn't see the constant mode, something like a cosmological constant, but everything with shorter wavelength, like matter, it's regular general relativity. So maybe vacuum energy degravitates. So that's something like this might solve the cosmological constant problem. And Andrew has an excellent exposition. He's here. Yes, back. Perfect. So I'm not going to pretend that I can teach you any more than he already did. The only problem, though, is it's hard to do cosmology with this, because at the linear level, as you can see here, it's easy to do this theory. There is no easy nonlinear generalization. And this cascading gravity that Andrew talked about is an attempt, but it's really hard to do calculations in it, at least as it stands. So that's why we are going to try to pretend that we have a shortcut. But we don't really. So, but here's the outline of how qualitatively this is going to solve the problems. That, of course, I told you why it solved the cosmological constant problem through degravitating a vacuum. The growth on the small scales, the fact as Andrew mentioned, when gravity becomes massive, there's a fifth force that enhances attraction of non-relativistic particles on the small scales. So this fifth force can make matter grow faster than lambda CDM, than you see in lambda CDM. And there could be a larger scale CMB cancellation because this is not something that's guaranteed from degravitation, but it's something that you can easily arrange to happen, that the integrated Sachs-Wolfe effect and Sachs-Wolfe cancel each other. And that's not very easy to do, but it turns out it's not hard to do this in the spirit of degravitation models. And that would solve all your problems. Okay? So the rest of it is a bit technical, and I have little time to go through it. So most of you are not going to get much out of it, unfortunately. But it's okay. So let me just try to put in everything I can. So we have some parameterization of this mass as a function of box, or as a function of wave number. It's the power law. There is nothing deep about it. And I think this Andrew also described this. And we somehow pretend that you can write down a Friedman equation, although we cannot really, because we don't understand the theory. But the Friedman equation is kind of looks like this. You have h squared and h to the power of alpha, which is kind of a generalization of this. We are inspired by this form of the propagator and write a Friedman equation that looks like this. And this is you can test this in the DGP model. You can for an alpha is 1/2, but in general there is no justification for this, very ad hoc. You can look at constraints from expansion history in a homogeneous universe on alpha, which is this power of h, and it's not surprising that if alpha is zero, it's just like lambda CDM. So for DGP, you have a strong constraint on RC. So this RC is basically the Compton wavelength of the graviton. And so this would be larger than Hubble scale. But as alpha gets smaller, you have weaker and weaker constraints. So the constraint is something like this. So if alpha goes to zero, so for a strictly massive gravity, mass doesn't depend on wavelength, this, there is no constraint from expansion history. But in homogeneous universe, could see this. And I think I cannot really go into detail. But you can look at the parameter that looks like this, which is basically the difference between those two potentials. This is zero if GR is the theory of the universe. And you can use analogy with DGP models. So for general relativity at early times at large densities, this goes to zero. And for a scalar tensor theory, this on sub-horizon scales at late times, G goes to -1/2. And G goes to 1, that means Newtonian potential vanishes. The psi vanishes on super-horizon scales at late times. And we don't have any justification for this other than that this gives you a cancellation of integrated Sachs-Wolfe and Sachs-Wolfe effect. And this is an outline of how this happens. It just turns out that if zeta is constant, and you can write it down in terms of phi minus, which is a lensing potential, and g, and you plug this in into here, if g goes from 0 to 1, the integrated Sachs-Wolfe and Sachs-Wolfe cancel each other. Just as simple as that. And it's very, yeah, you can just plug this in. If this combination is constant, and you plug this in here, when this g goes from 0 to 1, you get zero power. And this is an example of that. And here, the Compton wavelength of graviton is 100 megaparsec. So you see that for this model, you have basically a very good cancellation at low Ls. Sachs-Wolfe and ISW cancel against each other. And this is an example. So this was this quantity that I was showing you, S1/2, the integral, integral of correlation function squared. It's 49,000 from lambda CDM cosmology. It's a factor, more than a factor of 10 smaller if you do this cancellation business. Yeah, so this is similar to when you have a phase transition universe and W changes. Here you have the matter era, but G changes. So because you have early times when you have general relativity and G is zero, and late times where G becomes one at larger scales. And then this is just, you use this relationship to find the point. So there is a formula which is very complicated, so that's why I didn't write it. But it has these properties, that G is zero at early times and high densities, is -1/2 on a small on sub-horizon scales at late times again. And
so the specific theory that breaks the phi equals minus
exactly.
Relationship at late times.
Exactly.
It's broken at early times, but.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And, yeah.
But is this theory a full theory? Or is it a guess?
It can be a full theory, but there are just so many free parameters. Yeah, free functions, lots of free functions. And so I'm going to come back to that, but no, we cannot derive anything a priori. We can quantify, have lots of free parameters, but this is basically all we need to get this kind of behavior. So there are two kinds of behaviors that you need. One is this cancellation, that as Sachs-Wolfe and ISW can cancel against each other, and that exactly results from the fact that G goes from 0 to 1. On super horizon scales. At early times, G is zero, like GR. At late times, G is one.
But you need exact evolution of phi and psi.
Yes, yes.
And you have a full theory, how do you get this?
Yes, I do have full theory.
In one model.
Yes.
No, there is no full theory, it's just linearized.
Okay, so that's true. Everything is linearized. That's true.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Well, he's doing a phenomenology, but he's got a specific form of G that comes from DGP, is that correct?
Well, that's, so it's motivated by DGP.
No, I know it's heuristic. That's what he's doing. He's doing
phenomenology. But it's phenomenology, really, but it's a constant phenomenology.
The question is, if I have equations for the perturbations, how much phenomenology is there?
Well, no, I don't really think there's a good context.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So we don't want to upset. of the literature. But so let me tell you. So it is phenomenology, but it's within a framework. So we have linear equations, of course. But we cannot derive them from any fundamental principle. We have been inspired by the GP form and adding some other constraints. That doesn't completely constrain the model, but it gives us a class of models that we play with.
And it matches all the phenomenology of the known complete
theory. At least qualitatively. Yes. And this is an example for a transfer function. This is what I promised you, that the Newtonian potential could be different from Lensing potential in this model. So this is a redshift of 0.5 and complement at 100 megaparsec. So lambda CDM, of course, gives you a scale-independent transfer function. This is just transfer function during the matter era, because there is no scale dependence in lambda CDM. The Lensing potential is actually, it turns out, almost constant, has very subtle behavior, but the Newtonian potential could be very different. It could be very large on larger scale and smaller scales, but it's suppressed very much on larger scales. This is the part that gives you the cancellation, ISW and Saxful. This is the part that can give you excess in all those excess power on the smaller scales. And yes, so this is almost the end of it. So there are several observations, and I hope I convinced you to some extent that several observations that point to excess power on the smaller scales at late times. And massive gravity can potentially explain all those observations and also explain the lack of power at CMB. And also the fact that Lensing gives you a different behavior, from non-relativistic observables. And the model can roughly explain observations if the graviton complement is around 100 megaparsec, but this is very, very qualitative at this point. And this is the point that maybe another way of describing my answer to, it doesn't come out very well, does it? To Lev, but at our present level of understanding of this theory, the model is not uniquely fixed either by theory or by observation. It is constrained by both of them, but not fixed. So there are lots of degrees of freedom to play with. So this is a reiteration of past stuff, I guess. What should we see if these hints are to be believed? And I know I have minus 10 minutes or so. So you should detect many SD clusters by act as SPT on time, because if sigma is large, there should be many clusters out there.
Well, that's not true.
You think so? Okay.
It depends on how you normalize your power spectrum post today.
Well, yes, maybe. I'm just saying that if there is a CBI architecture, that means probably there are more clusters than you expect from lambda CDM. So that means we should see more clusters. But there could be some subtlety there that is I may not know about. So that would confirm the CBI axis. Maybe large kinetic SC signal from time clusters, that would confirm all these dark flow claims. The large density to space distortions measured by, as Pat was advertising, you can measure it by JDAM, by Euclid in Europe, or by Chime. They can all test this because they measure the non-relativistic potential, the Newtonian potential, which all those discrepancies indicate could be very different from lambda CDM. There could be a scale-dependent bias, and this is a technical point, but it's something you can see with LSST and Panastars possibly. Or there could be subtle distortions in the weak Lensing map, not as large as in density space distortion. But it's still, if you have good enough accuracy, you can do this. And I'm just going to put this, so we need non-linear models of the gravitation, the line of what Andrew did. Andrew and Justin and Claudia and other people here. The cosmological solutions, that's, we really need to make predictions. And these are really non-existent graphs. Even if we have them, they may not work. So they may not actually explain our universe, but maybe we can come up with alternative models of gravity that have desired behavior like what I described. Thank you.